back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because everybody snapped up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. A very special guest coming at us from, you know, I think I've got that routine, you know, the fabulously fluoridated capital, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and yeah. I was just thinking about it last night. You know how 9/11 truthers are called the truth movement, or they're called truthers, yeah? I was just thinking, you know, what do you call anti-fluoride people? Toothers. The tooth toothers. Movement.
I like it. I do like it. It's interesting over here. We've got a situation. I'm in Melbourne. Melbourne Metro area, and we're fluoridated. And it's just wonderful that our government sees fit to medicate us, whether we like it or not. I just think it's such a fantastic thing that they would serve us in such a lovely way. Not,
you know.
However,
usually you get bored at dinner when you go out on a fluoridate.
However, just to our south, we have the city of Geelong, and their water system is entirely separate to ours. And there was some talk a little while back of connecting the two. And I tell you what, there was a really, really healthy outcry. I really enjoyed watching it from the Geelong-based anti-fluoride people who had been saying, well, we've managed to get this far without fluoride in our water, and if we connect our water with the Melbourne system, then our water will be fluoridated according to Melbourne standards. The Geelong standards would have been adjusted to meet the Melbourne standards. And I'm actually not sure what happened in the end with that particular proposed link between the two. I don't know whether it happened or not, but certainly the fluoride argument is one that at the moment has been lost over here, but I tell you what, it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, I was just thinking about this the other day as well. Here's a joke for you. Why did all the government-run schools have to be shut down?
Don't know.
Because they didn't have any principals.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Is that what you lie awake at night dreaming up? Just, you know, jokes that you can tell on air?
I actually do. You know, that's the scary part.
Is there a group like Internet Radio Presenters Anonymous or something that, you know, where people like you and I can go to get help?
I don't think there's anybody that can help us, bro.
You think we're too far gone?
Look, we're way, way too far gone.
You might be right. You might be right. So where do listeners go to if someone's listening to us going, you know what, I need like an internet radio. I mean, hey, even the network promo says that it might be addictive. So, yeah, where do people go to get help? I think they should come to us to get help. You know, just keep listening to the radio show. Yeah, we'll help you. We won't help you with your addiction, but we'll help you laugh and stuff.
Yeah, we'll supply you with the more hits you need. You know, American Freedom Radio. They have an app that you can put into a syringe and just hook it to your veins.
Intravenous radio. That's genius.
Mm-hmm.
you do realize we've done it again. We're now talking utter and absolute tosh. We've managed to talk our way into it.
a little nonsense now and then amuses even the wisest men.
Well, there you go. I'm glad you've learned that one by heart.
Yeah, it is absolutely important. In fact, I think that was a Roald Dahl quote. And people do need to recognize as well, it took me quite a while to realize this. Stuff ain't really that serious, okay? Mm. I know stuff's bad. It's really bad. But if you're not doing anything about it, it's kind of like having a boss that you really hate and a job that you really hate, and you're keeping on going in every single day, and you're accumulating this hate and hate and hate and hate, and you're not even getting it out. And so as a result, you wind up hating yourself, okay, because of your external anger. And that's what happens to a lot of people in the truth movement as well. They start to hate the New World Order, hate the government, hate the sheeple and that kind of thing. And before you know it, you're laden with a massive carry-on baggage cult of hate, and it's not good for you, okay? You've got to let that stuff out. Like, for example, if you go out attacking people all the time and you're not actually helping anyone, you become a much, much worse an unhappy individual for other people to hang out with, and you wind up losing all your friends as well. Mm. That's why I go off and try and give people coverage, do videos for them, and whatnot. I'm not asking for anything in return. I'm mostly just really doing it for my sanity, because you maintain a hell of a lot more sanity and a hell of a lot more good humor if you're going out trying to endlessly help other people and actually succeeding.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, your way of dealing with this pressure, so to speak, I think is a good one in laughing and in finding the lighter side of it. I come at it a different way, and that is that I believe that one of the reasons why, and I've seen it happen, people who get involved in the Truth of Movement, for want of a better term, can actually lose their marbles, can kind of push themselves too hard. And one of the ways that I think to deal with that...
Or push the caps lock key too hard.
Exactly.
There's only three types of reptilians, you know.
And I think it's partly because of the sense of powerlessness. Human beings don't like to feel like we can't do anything, that we have no control. We want to have some sense of control. And I can't control the world, and if I could, the world would be a terrible place. I don't want to control the world. But there are elements that I can influence, and so that's what I focus on. And on my radio show, I tend to be very, very boring, very, very factual. I tend to go each week, I'll focus on either one or two different issues, and I'll break it down and I'll talk about it. And I try to finish on some kind of action point. I try to finish by saying, hey, this is something that we can actually do about this. This is something that we can actually, you know, whether it's just simply encouraging people to get active and find local people that they can support, you know, whatever that action point may be, by focusing on the things that we need to understand but are small enough that we can maybe influence them in some way, that's how I kind of maintain my sanity. And so I then produce videos and I try and influence things in some way. I just released part two of what will eventually be a three-part series. It's called the Forbidden History Trilogy. The first one was the Forbidden History of Unpopular People. That was all about free speech. I just last week released the Forbidden History of Terrible Taxes. And if you're in Australia and you've ever wondered just how much tax do you pay out of your annual out of an annual median salary, well, I break it down. I actually have it right there for you. You can see exactly how much tax you end up paying once you factor in everything, not just the income tax, but also your GST, your fuel excise, and then all the indirect taxes. You know, businesses pay tax on everything that they do, and then they have to add that to the price of the products that you buy. So essentially, all business taxes are paid for by consumers. You're a consumer, you earn a wage, you pay tax on that wage, then you buy, you spend that money. You're funding taxes through the spending of that money as well. What does it all add up to? Well, this video goes into a bit of detail about that, and as is my way, at the end, it gives you some ideas about things that you might be able to do about it. And so my way of staying sane in all of this is by making these sorts of videos and trying to give people some kind of an action point, something, even no matter how small it may be, something that they can do that helps to maintain some degree of control. However small that degree may be, I think it's important for the human psyche, and I think it helps to protect against this kind of over-analysis paralysis that some people get.
Yeah, and the worst thing you can do is nothing. I was listening to your show. I caught the tail end of it. Might have been. Let me see. I've got the date down here on the 1st of February,
right.
And you were doing this rant about the new rights industry in Australia, and I was like, oh my god, that was the most fantastic rant that I've heard in at least 3 or 4 years. You know,
well, thank you, appreciate that. Yeah, no, look,
I've heard a lot.
Yeah. Well, and before I actually sort of wound up in my sort of concluding points, which is probably what you're referring to as a rant, I had spent the previous hour or so really breaking down what rights are, positive rights versus negative rights, trying to give people a really good understanding. And I guess that's more my particular angle. I try and help people to understand something and then be able to do something about it. And in particular, one of the my great joys is when people get in touch with me and say, you know, things along the lines of, hey, thanks to your show, I was able to have a conversation with, you know, another person XYZ, and explain things to them. And if I've empowered other people to be able to explain, because a lot of people agree with a lot of what the things that you and I say on air, but a lot of people don't feel that they're empowered to enunciate it, to be able to explain it, to be able to convince somebody else. And if I can bring someone to the point where they can have a conversation over the lunchroom table or over the dinner table or wherever it might be, and actually be able to enunciate these ideas and explain the things that they believe when it comes to government and libertarianism and so forth, then I've achieved my purpose. And I tell you, they are my absolute favorite types of emails to get from listeners and from fans, is people saying, hey, listen, thanks for that video. I sent it on to a friend, and now we're, you know, he's open to these ideas now when he wasn't before. Or, you know, I took what you talked about on radio and I talked about it with my wife or my husband and so on. They're absolutely my favorite kind of emails to get.
It's so positive, you know, because you're actually waking people up. I was looking at this Facebook group just earlier while we were on off air, I think, and it says "Wake up the masses," and I went, "What a stupid idea!" I don't need to mean to sound like angry or bitter or silly when I say this, but you know, just look at the reality, ladies and gentlemen. What Topher was saying before is about how one group of grassroots people with zero budget managed to actually affect the election outcome on a very poignant issue. The masses did not really participate. Okay, all the history is basically the good guys and the bad guys duking it out against each other. One is trying to control the masses, and the other is trying to give them freedom to the people who refuse to fight for it themselves. Okay, the masses don't matter; they have never mattered, and it doesn't mean that I hate them or I don't want to think. I want them to be free because they're the ones who raise good children. They're the ones who actually do good, decent, hard work. They're the ones who grow all the food. They're the ones who do all of these things that actually make our society work. That's the masses' job. It's the job of those who are of a higher calling to lead those masses to freedom, not to wake them up to the other scenarios, because it's just not possible.
Well, look, I'm
not sure if it's not possible, but it certainly has never been done. And not to mention, in order to free everybody, it doesn't even need to be done because it's been done before.
Allow me to disagree with you on one point, though. I still think it's important to try. And the reason for that is this. It's not your or my place to decide who's who. That's a very communist idea. Oh, well, I'll organize society. You're one of the elite. You're one of the smart people. Oh, you're just one of the masses. We'll just send you off to a farm to work kind of idea. So I think it's important to try to just get the message out. Some people will respond. A lot of people won't. But let people make up their own minds as to where they fit in the scheme of things rather than try to, you know. Yeah, but look, can I
also make another point as well? The communistic ideal of we need to have collectivism and things like that, I think, is also the reason why people want to wake up the masses, because it's almost like I want to wake up the masses because I don't want to have to do anything myself. I want everybody else to do my job, and that seems very collectivist and communist to me too.
It's
a complex thing.
I'm sure you would have come across those. It's like a poem sort of thing that's been written about somebody, nobody, anybody. I think it's just those three. And, somebody wanted anybody to do something, but, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it sort of treats them as people. And it just really points out this whole thing of we're all waiting for each other. You know, we're all somebodies. We're all anybodies. We're all nobodies if we want to be. You know, if we choose to do nothing, but we're all actually out here waiting for each other. And if we really believe that individualism is the answer, if we really believe that we don't need to be organized by some central organization, by some central bureaucracy, then stop waiting for a libertarian movement to come along for you to get swept up in. Because what you're asking for is inherently anti-libertarian. A libertarian movement, which is actually forming, must, by definition, be made up of the individual efforts of a whole bunch of people acting independently, whose cumulative effect becomes a movement. It cannot be following a particular person. It cannot be, oh, well, there's a libertarian political party. Yes, we need libertarian political parties. But if they are leading the charge, we've got a problem. Because libertarianism, by definition, requires individual action and individual responsibility. That's why I push so hard, and I push my listeners, and I'm now going to push your listeners so hard. Just do something. Find that one thing that really rings your bell, that one thing that really gets your goat, and do something about it. Because it's that cumulative effort of all of us doing those little things that then add up to a movement.
I have described it as the tactic of the cactus. A cactus protects itself by covering itself in spines from every direction. And for every conspiracy, there is one activist in one particular area or town or whatever for whom that conspiracy is their absolute bee's knees. You know, it's their passion. And, you know, without even noticing that there's other spines on this cactus, you wind up arbitrarily and acting in a collectivist fashion to protect it without even being aware of any of the other spines of the cactus protecting humanity from tyranny that's coming to get you, and you give them a little prick.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's each of us. I mean, you know, if we can all be little pricks, I think that's the takeout here. if I can put it in crass terms.
I'm 6 foot four. It might be a bit difficult.
Well, you can be a big prick then. You have my permission.
That's more my style.
Yeah. No, fair enough. We've got to get away from this idea. And I get asked this. I get asked by people all the time, would you run for government? The answer is no, people. Number one, I don't want to throw away my life by getting caught up in the political machine. I have better things to do. I really do. You know, I have much more enjoyable things to do than getting trapped in politics. Secondly, you shouldn't need me or you, Vinny, or anyone else, particular person. It shouldn't have, you know, the attempt to get Ron Paul in as president was fantastic. I certainly supported the idea, but it was missing the point. A lot of people felt that when they failed to get Ron Paul in, that was it. Oh, well, it's over. No, it's not. It's about what each of us individually do. It's not about those centerpieces. It's not about those high-profile individuals that we can all, you know, get in line and follow. That's missing the point. It's about what each of us can do individually. Now, if Ron Paul had gotten in as president, let's say by some miracle he'd been nominated by the Republicans and then had won the election, you know, in 4 or 8 years' time, he would not have been the president anymore. And without overwhelming support from the American people and from the Senate and from the House, he would not, in that amount of time, have been able to shape or reshape America into some libertarian paradise. Something as big and as complex as an entire nation takes more time than that to change the direction of. It takes more time than that to reset, if you will, back to its founding principles. What that means is that even if Ron Paul had become president in some perfect world scenario, we still would have needed individuals to stand up and take their own individual action in order to reshape the country back into libertarian ideals, back into its founding ideals. It does not matter who you think you're following. It does not matter who you think can save the day for the libertarian movement. The bottom line is, it's up to individuals.
Well, and again, it's like Gia Griffin told me. He says, there's no such thing as a group. It's an abstraction. Kind of like there's no such thing as a forest. You know, you can't touch a forest. You can't touch a group of people. You can touch a tree. You can touch a person. All there is the individual. Really. If you're trying to make the world into a collectivist model, you're trying to make the world into something that does not exist. And that's called insanity. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's not drones that I'm running from. It's the earthquake weapons I know will come.
I preferred their version. No offense, but, you know, their version.
Well, they're singing about love. I'm talking about devastation and death and, like, the Rockefeller Horror Picture Show or something, whatever.
Death, destruction, murder, madness, and mayhem. One of my favorite subjects.
In fact, there's even a DJ duo. One's called Mischief and one's called Mayhem, and they do sets together.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting.
That's kind of clever. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Welcome to the stage, Mischief and Mayhem.
Yeah, I'd go see that. I'd pay money to see that.
Yeah, if we had any.
Look, I don't even bother to say that anymore because it's just an assumed, you know, an assumed addition to any statements that I make. If I had money, I would ...
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? Have you noticed how everybody in the truth movement, you know, bar maybe a few people, are just broke-ass mofos, you know, they got nothing? And what's interesting is that you have a look at all these people in the mainstream media who shill BS for a frickin' living. They're rich as hell.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that I've noticed is that wealthier people tend to have more invested in the system and tend to be more resistant to the idea that the system may be flawed in some way. If someone's made a lot of money in business or in banking or in finance, they don't want to hear that our money is fictional. They don't want to hear that the fractional reserve banking system is a con, that the US Fed is one of the greatest frauds ever perpetrated, because they've made a fortune out of this line of work. I had an interesting conversation a little while ago with a guy who works in debt collection. Now, the company that he works for buys debts off banks and so forth, and then rings people and sort of threatens them with legal action or the rest and tries to get money off them. And I said, you do realize that debt can't be assigned. He said, ridiculous. We get these things enforced in court all the time. I said, well, I know you get them enforced in court, but if someone knows their defense, if someone knows what they're actually talking about, you'll be thrown out on your ear, because it breaches the privity of contract. Contracts can only be applicable to the people who signed them in the first place. Even if there is a clause in a contract saying that it's assignable, it cannot be assigned to a party that was not privy to it in the first place. And if you walk into court with that defense, it will get thrown out. Now, I had a dispute a while ago with a company that were claiming that I owed them money that I don't believe I owed them, so I refused to pay them. They sold the debt onto some poor unsuspecting collections agency, and that collections agency then rang me. And I said, well, excuse me, who are you? And they went through the whole usual rigmarole of, oh, well, we bought the debt, it's now been assigned to us. I said, well, that's fantastic. You've got a contract with that company. You go and chase that company. You don't have a contract with me. And evidently, they went and got legal advice and found out that I was right, because they stopped chasing me. They didn't bother to actually pursue that any further. Now, some people get dragged into court and have to use the defense in court. Some people present that defense to the companies that are chasing them, and the companies know enough to walk away. My point here is that these are people who have something invested in the idea that the system is okay. These are companies who depend on the ignorance of the rest of us in order to be able to continue perpetrating their particular business model, which is to intimidate people into paying money which they're actually not legally obliged to pay, because of the assignment of the debt, which is not legally enforceable, as much as it will be enforced by a magistrate if you don't come in with the correct offence. It's actually not legally enforceable. So there we have an example of a business that has a vested interest in believing that the system is good, that the system should continue as it is. And I tend to find that the more people have made money, it tends to be the big one, the more power people have, the less open they are to the idea that things are not the way they ought to be.
This reminds me of a conversation my uncle had with me. He was really, really drunk and scabbing a cigarette off me while telling me that because I have smoked weed, I'll never amount to anything.
That makes perfect sense.
And he's very wealthy, and has made an awful lot of cash out of getting people in debt to buy his cars and things like that. He's got his own financier operation and what have you. It's exactly what you're talking about. And meanwhile, it doesn't matter to him that I've become the top-ranking conspiracy commentator in New Zealand history, or that I've put more New Zealand activists on air than anybody else in this country's history, or that I've met and rubbed shoulders with the top commentators in hundreds of different fields and whatnot. It doesn't matter to him.
No. The scorecard, as far as a lot of people are concerned, is your bank account. That's the scorecard. And unfortunately, what they sort of fail to realize is that when you die, which we all do, we all will, that scorecard is actually the most worthless. The scorecard that matters is the mark that you've left on other people's lives. It's actually the influence that you've had on other people's lives, and whether or not you've made the world a better place and other people's lives better to live. But unfortunately, for these sorts of people, they have money, and that proves that they're right.
Yeah. It's a measure of success at life, and that's the parameter that they've been brought up to. You're only successful at life if you achieve this achievement. If you don't achieve that achievement, you haven't achieved anything.
It's an interesting one, because for some people, that's education. The proof at success at life is having a doctorate, or at the very least having a master's, you know, with an honours year and what have you, you know. For others, it's money. Proof of success of life is money. It's interesting, so much of our world and so many people are completely consumed by pursuing ideas of success that die when they do. Have a think about all the common pursuits: fame, fortune, education, power. These pursuits all die when we do, which means that ultimately they're all actually worthless. We can't carry power with us into the grave. I mean, things that we wrote might be influential and so forth. We might be able to influence others. But in terms of actual active power, the ability to make something happen, it dies when we do. You know, our money becomes worthless to us when we die. None of that's actually worth anything. And yet so many people who don't question the system around us are pursuing the very things that they can't take with them when they die. Their entire life is invested in pursuing what in the end turns out to be a lie.
And then there are those people who will write in their will a whole bunch of insane requests and things like that. This is what you want to do with my money, and I want to make sure that yeah. person over there doesn't get any of it, and I want to finance this, that, and the other, and this kind of thing. It's a really selfish thing to try and fulfill your deeds beyond the grave. This is what my father did to my family. After his death and everything, I didn't know until after he died that I was disowned at the age of 11. You know, isn't that interesting?
Wow.
And I didn't know until 17 years later when he died that me and all my brothers and sisters ain't getting nothing out of his umpteen million dollars of whatever.
Yeah, that's lovely. Nice thing to find out.
See, and this is exactly what we're talking about here, about the measurement of success in life and how unwilling you are to really change your views on it, you know?
Mm. Well, here's the interesting thing. Money is important because it empowers you. It makes it easier for you to do things. What you choose to do is what really matters in the long run. Having money certainly makes it easier. And so, for example, I'm trying to work my way into the film industry, and part of that is to be able to influence the sorts of ideologies that are getting put forward in films and in television, that sort of stuff, because I think a tremendous amount of influence is exerted by our entertainment media. But part of that also is in the hope that I'll be able to make a bit of money and be able to get on with doing some of the things that I think are really going to be important. People with a bit of money, you know, funding certain public awareness campaigns, financing certain kinds of court cases against government and government's agencies, and these sorts of things that I want to do that unfortunately do require money. So it would be silly for me to sit here and say that money's not important. But if someone is prioritizing money to the point that they believe it's a scorecard, that the having of the money itself is actually the purpose, then unfortunately they've condemned themselves to living a completely pointless life. They're pursuing a measure of success that is just worthless.
Well, see, and again, it's like sort of vengeance, wanting to get revenge on people, things like that. You know, the word RE, or you know, repeat, revenge, regurgitate, you know, that kind of thing. If you really kind of operating under any type of paradigm that starts with one of those RE words, you're not actually going forward. You're going backwards. You're repeating things rather than actually creating and moving things to a better place. And I've got this conclusion as well, that if you're not focused on pushing things forward, if you're not focused on progress, then you are most certainly focused on holding yourself and everybody else back with you.
Yeah, and that's a tragic reality where people just lose their entire lives trying to set right something that happened in the past. There's this funny thing about the past. You can't change it. That's what makes it the past. It's already passed you by. It's happened, and nothing, you know, nothing that you do is ever going to change that. You know, for example, if I can touch on something that's close to home for you, your father disowned you from the will. Unfortunately, that's past. You know, and yeah, you've obviously just gotten on with trying to have your own life and trying to have your own influence, and as you say, move forward. What you know, you've asked yourself the only question that matters, which is, what can I do? And this goes right back to what we were saying before about just that individual action. So many people email me or ring me or talk to me and say, but what can I do? Yeah, this, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do the other thing. Okay, what can you do? You know, I've had people say to me, oh, but I'm not articulate. I could never host a radio show. Well, if everyone hosted a radio show, who would be listening to you and me right now, Vince? You and I would have a very boring, very pointless little chat right now.
It'd just be you and me. It'd just be you and me having a conversation.
Yeah, it's called a Skype phone call. You know, lots of people do that. There's nothing particularly unique about it. And so the point isn't to mimic what someone else is doing. The point is to stop saying, oh, I can't do the things that those guys are doing, or that woman over there is doing, or that he's done over there, or whatever it may be, and say, no, no, no. In my life, in my world, in my neighborhood, in the things that grab my attention, what can I do? And if more people ask themselves that question and then actually took action, no matter how small and insignificant that thing might appear to be, just start, just take action, start to do things. And then all of a sudden, a movement comes out of nowhere, a genuine grassroots movement, a genuine movement that is motivated by individuals who each took the little step, the little thing that they could do, and all of a sudden it adds up to be a massive thing.
You know, this also reminds me of an incident. I was walking down Queen Street in Auckland one day, and I saw this kid holding an empty box, and he had a black eye. And I went up to him and I said, bro, what happened? And he says, oh, my dad's the owner of Dickie's Work Clothing in New Zealand, and he gave me a whole box of clothing to, you know, just kind of give out to people free on the street. And a couple of guys came up to me, bashed me over and stole all the clothes out of the box. And they stole my weed too. And I was like, bro, that is freaking sad. And I had a joint in my pocket. And this guy had also had his cash taken off him, and I had a joint in my pocket and $10, and I gave it to him.
Mm.
So it didn't matter right then at that moment that he'd seen the worst of humanity, because the best of humanity was there to just come and straight pick him up. Okay, that's the small difference that you can make, you know? It doesn't matter how many bad things happen to you. It only takes one good thing happening to you to make all of that go away if you're willing to be open to it.
And it's funny how that good thing can be disproportionately small compared to the bad things. You know, how many times we've all faced in our life some absolutely heartbreaking moment, something that's just awful. And all it sometimes takes is for one person to come along with an encouraging word. And an encouraging word is nothing in the face of whatever it is that's gone wrong, and yet somehow it makes all the difference. You know, a lot of people look at the world and they see how much is going wrong, and they say, well, I can't compete with that. I can't match the scope and the scale of what's awful in the world and what's going wrong. Well, the good news is you don't have to. You've just got to come along with what little you've got to offer. It's, you know, if I can go to a religious reference, when Jesus was giving his sermon to the 5,000, we have it recorded that no one had brought food with them. No one obviously expected him to talk for as long as he did, and they all got hungry. And so Jesus takes the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and he multiplied that. Now, what's interesting is that boy didn't come along to feed everyone. He came along to feed himself, but he was willing to offer that little tiny bit, which was totally inadequate. It was completely inadequate to the task at hand. And yet, you know, in that case, through the power of God, it was multiplied. And I think that there's a very real sense in which that happens when we do good things for each other. There is this multiplication effect where we come along with what little we have to offer, however inadequate that may be to the task. But when we offer it, when we actually just put it out there and say, here's this little one good thing that I can do for you, there is a sense that it gets multiplied. It becomes far more powerful than that little thing should have any right to be, and yet it makes a massive difference.
Mm-hmm. And another incident that also comes to mind as you were saying that is I did these filming dance parties, these shift parties back in the day, right? And we had these after parties, and one person turned up to the after party sort of late, and she'd been pulled over and given a $60 ticket for speeding on her way to this party that she was late for. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, oh man, that sucks, here's $5. And then before she knew it, she'd been given $80 from all the people surrounding and the thing. And it's like, wow, that's amazing. That's so cool. That's so wonderful. Yeah. And everybody loves me. And it's almost like, I thank God I got that ticket, because if I hadn't been given that ticket, I wouldn't have been given so much support and realized my faith in all these people around me was well placed.
Yeah. And that, I think, would be a significant thing in that story. It's not about the money. It's about the fact that she felt loved. She felt that support. It's not about the fact that, oh, hey, I've just turned a profit by speeding. You know, I turned a $60 fine into an $80 income. You know, no, it would have been just the fact that she suddenly discovers that a room full of people that were just people a moment ago are now actually, you know, friends, are actually supporters and people that actually love her in that way. So, yeah, it's the little things. It really is the little things. You know, where I live in Melbourne, there are a lot of homeless people around, and it can really wear on you. But at the same time, you know, it takes something very, very little, very, very small to completely change their day.
That's right. And ladies and gentlemen, understand, even though evil is around you, it's the little good things that you do every day that keeps the badness at bay. We'll be right back with Topher Field. at livingusefulshow.com. Welcome back. Jamming we are, a big monkey wrench into the apparatus of brainwashing and New World Order scumbaggery. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. By the way, my girlfriend, you know how Topher, when you take your car in for a warrant check and you kind of like cross your fingers, let's hope nothing's broken.
I'm assuming that's a roadworthy type check in New Zealand. Is it a warrant check?
I don't think she had her fingers crossed. It's like $1,400. And there's nothing actually really wrong with the car. It's just wear and tear, you know, like brake pads, tires, this sort of stuff. And we don't know what the hell we're going to do. And I told her I'd ask the listeners. I mean, look, it's when you've got a missus, her financial problems are your financial problems. So, and when you have listeners, my financial problems are something you can't help with. So please, if you can donate $1,400 New Zealand, please do. Go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Go to and click that big old fashioned donate button, and we'll get the Mrs. Car fixed because she's quitting her job. I've been telling her for years, you know, honey, you got to quit that slave job. You've got to stop, you know, being part of the system. You got to work for yourself. And she's finally decided to. And of course, once she finally decides to quit her slave job and her solid source of income, boom, $1,400 car repair bill. The universe is a right funny there. Place, isn't it? It's like, is this place fracking with me?
Well, I'll put in a good word for you here in that, it takes an awful lot of commitment to do what you do, and you're on 5 days a week, and you're on for, you know, a couple of hours at a time, and that pretty much precludes you and denies you the opportunity to hold down a normal job. So I'd certainly throw in a good word for you and say, look, you're doing good work, and if there is anyone out there who can help you to fund yourself. Because let's be honest, the mechanic and the government doesn't care whether or not you have an income. They just want you to pay up and be done with it. So if there's anyone out there that can help, then certainly please do.
Also another side of things is that I've been really concerned recently that there's so many bloggers and activists and filmmakers and radio show hosts out there which is totally broke. But on the one hand. On the other hand, whenever they need a bill paid, whenever they need something sussed, it gets sorted. But usually right on the deadline, it'll come in exactly when you need it.
And only as much as you need.
And as a result, two things happen. You learn not to stress about things that are in the future. You only stress about things that are right in front of you right here, right now. And number two, you have faith that everything's going to work out in the end.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a funny old world because I've been threatened with being thrown in jail over different things where I've refused to pay the government here various fees and charges that they've wanted to charge me for their services, which I never asked for, and things that I never wanted them to do. I got to the point, and I don't know if I was faced with it again, I'd probably have to re-get to the point to the same point again. But I got to the point where I was like, you know what? If I go to jail, it'd be absolutely awful. I would hate it. I mean, jail is not going to be a fun place for me, but that's cool. You know, that's okay. If they throw me in prison because I continue to refuse to pay the extortion money which they're demanding from me for no good reason, I'm actually willing to go to jail rather than pay them that money. And you kind of get to this place where you mentioned faith. It's, for me, it's very much a case of just having the faith that no matter how bad things get, it's still okay. It's, okay, so I don't have money to pay that bill. I'm getting people, I'm getting telephone calls from people telling me that my bills are overdue. I'm getting various things like that. That's actually okay. I'm actually able to sleep at night under circumstances that other people might sit there and think, oh, no, this is terrible. This is impossible. This is, this can't be happening to me. And I just sort of go, okay, I'll worry about that in the morning. You know, there's nothing I can do right now. It's whatever time of night it might be. And it's just, okay, close my eyes, go to sleep, sleep like a baby. You know, the greatest peace can sometimes come in the worst of circumstances. It's more a state of mind. It's just a way of being and a way of living.
Yeah,
that brings peace.
This reminds me of a conversation I was having with my mate Mikhail. We were sitting in the car, and he just learned about the reptilian conspiracy and the aliens and all that kind of stuff, and he's just kind of freaking out about it. And it's like, oh my god, there's reptilians in charge of everything. And I said, okay, bro, even if they do exist, let me ask you this question: have you ever seen one? No.
Yeah.
Have one of them ever actually done anything to you that you can really quantify? No.
No.
Then you're sitting here being afraid of something that you've never seen and has never actually done anything to you that you can quantify. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, that's an interesting realization, Vinny. I'm suddenly not afraid anymore.
And that comes right back to what I was talking about before about control. I like to focus on the things that we can exert some level of control over. And the rest of it, if you can't control it, why in the world would you lose sleep over it? Honestly, why would you sit there stressing about something that you cannot control? You know, if you are sitting there afraid that the government is going to come and bash down your front door, let me ask you something. Can you control whether or not they show up tomorrow morning to bash down your front door? No.
I can. Two words. Bear traps.
Well, what I was about to say, all you can do is be prepared or not be prepared. So if you've taken the reasonable steps necessary to be prepared for such an eventuality, don't lose sleep over it, because you cannot control it. You cannot control whether or not they show up. All you can control is whether or not you're prepared. If you're prepared, go to sleep. Sleep like a baby. You know, enjoy a glass of wine. You know, talk with your wife and your husband and your family and live a normal life. Don't sit there paranoid over things you can't control. Take control over the things that you can control and then leave the rest.
Yeah, the rest is inconsequential. I mean, you know, what difference does it make? Well, here's the difference that it makes. You lose sleep, which has adverse effects on your health and mental stability. And if you ain't healthy and you ain't mentally stable and you're wanting to contribute something good to society, you're not going to be able to because you're stressed about things you can't do nothing about and making yourself unwell in the body and in the mind.
And the antidote to that, of course, is listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show and having a good laugh every day.
Uh-huh.
Just a little shameless plug in there for you, Vinnie. I'll send you the bill later.
All right.
No worries. Now, speaking of shameless plugs, I just realized during the break that I mentioned my latest video and didn't give a URL where people can go and actually have a look at my work and see some of the stuff. So if you don't mind, I'm going to jump in. And if you'd like to have a look at the two existing parts of what will become a three-part trilogy called the Forbidden History Trilogy, you can go to www.theforbiddenhistory.com. Cryptic, I know. You wouldn't expect that for a series called Forbidden History, but it's www.theforbiddenhistory.com. And parts one and two are already up. Part one is all about free speech and dealing in particular with the Finkelstein Report, which is an anti-free speech report that came out that was a recommendation to our government here in Australia, although it deals with wider issues of free speech and should be of interest to people around the world. Then part two, which has only just been released a week ago, it's already got over 20,000 views, is all about taxation here in Australia. And if you want to get some idea of how much tax a median wage earner actually pays over here, then I break down all the figures and go into detail about what happens to our tax money and so forth in part two, The Forbidden History of Terrible Taxes. So www.theforbiddenhistory.com, and check it out, pass it on, and the more support you can give me and the more you can spread those videos far and wide, the better it's going to be for me. And in the end, hopefully, if my videos are able to influence people, the better it'll be for everyone.
Right. Well, we only have about 2 minutes left in the show now. What exactly are we going to do in the next couple of weeks? I mean, I have this real concern, of course, that you know, there's a census going on and the New Zealand assets are being sold and there's drone strikes and the NDAA and this kind of thing. And like we were just pointing out earlier, these things are outside of our control. So it's not something we can really do a whole lot about. And I don't know exactly where I'm even going with this. To tell you the truth, there's a whole lot of stuff going down every single day, but you don't really have to deal with it if it ain't your responsibility. What's going on in America ain't my responsibility. Sure, I have an American talk show, and I bring on Americans to talk about these kind of issues so that the public who are listening can actually do something about it. If you're listening to this show, by all means, don't let us take the responsibility off your hands.
The key takeaway here is please do what you can. Vinny, you're on this, you're hosting this radio show because that's something that you can do. I make my videos and I host my own radio show because that's something that I can do. Jan B, who I mentioned before, she started a protest party against a pipeline that was being built because that was something that she could do. The focus has to be, listeners, what can you do? What's that one thing, big or small, that you can do that'll begin to make a difference?
You know, it's really that simple, isn't it? Mm. A friend of mine, he was like virtually in tears at a bar a couple of weeks ago because he's doing the thing you shouldn't do. Think about all these things that are outside your control. And he was like, what can I do? What can I do? As though it's a rhetorical question. And look at it this way, ladies and gentlemen. Don't think what can I do is a rhetorical question. It is a question that requires an answer. But more to the point, it is a question that requires action. Mm-hmm. Don't sit back and do nothing. Do anything, you know. Just like me, giving my last joint, my last $10 to a guy who'd been knocked over and had all his stuff stolen off him. Just one tiny little action like that, in any way, shape, or form that you can do any day. Go out there and fucking help somebody who needs your help. Just in some small way, you will feel better about it because you know that you're actually doing something worthwhile and good with your life and good for people. If you want to spend all your life, on the other hand, attacking people of any kind, regardless of whether or not they're bad guys or good guys or whatever the heck that you think that you're doing, just remember that if you're going to attack people all the time, you will run out of friends very, very quickly, and you'll have nobody to defend you when people come to attack you back. Topher, thank you so much for your time, man. It's been an incredible show. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.